Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for the one, the only, a Bubba Report contributor, a Bubba Report, a Bubba Show, a Bubba Publishing, a man, a myth, the legend, my friend Keith Bliss, Vice President of Katonin Company, Fox Business, CNBC contributor, does everything, the man of everything. What's up, Mr. Bliss?
Well, hello, Todd. After that introduction, I don't quite know what else to say, but I'll give it my best shot. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. So, you know, Keith, obviously the world is in shambles, which we've talked about in the past. But, you know, one thing that doesn't always mean, you know, just because the world's in a problem doesn't mean that the markets are going to have a problem. Now, I do believe, and I think that markets are probably in a little bit of trouble here. However, we've seen some, you know, big rallies. And of course, that's fairly typical of a bear market movement, is when you get those vicious rallies. Typically, bull markets kind of grind higher and bear markets explode and then they fall back down again. But what's your general overview of what's going on in the world in general?
Well, as you're pointing out, and again, a little spoiler alert for all the listeners here, you and I talk quite often, and we compare notes. And I am in total agreement with you. I think the markets are in a bit of a mess right now. Certainly, the world, both from a geopolitical and economic front, is in a bit of a mess right now, and we're going to have some real problems with the market if your bias is being long any of the asset markets. When you take a look at some of the movements, some of the strange movements that we have, the correlations in the market that we have right now, and how they don't even really compare to what we know historically are the traditional interrelationships and correlations between the markets, you know something's a mess. And you're absolutely right. One of the reasons that you have these, that people should realize that in bear markets or moving into bear markets, you have very sharp rallies up, is there's so many bets out there for the market going down that people will layer in their shorts and they'll have pretty tight stops. And as we get any kind of movement forward, as the stops get taken out, it just has the effect of propelling the market upward, almost as if it's in a funnel and we're blowing it out the top. So that's where you have the sharp movements. But those sharp movements up, people should not be fooled. They don't belie the underlying weakness in the overall marketplace, which is what we have now, which is what I believe now. And I think 2016 is going to be a very tough year for the equity markets, for sure. Maybe the treasury markets will finish up if you're long treasuries, but the equity markets, I think, are going to have a very tough time finishing positive in 2016, and I'm not afraid to make that prediction sitting here in the middle of February.
Yeah, I know, and again, I don't blame you for making that prediction. I mean, I think there's a lot of, I mean, you know, I'm pretty simple, and I break things down to probability. And of course, we've been in a 7-year bull market, so just out of pure numbers suggests that there would be some problems. And there is a ton of problems out there. I mean, you know, we're already negative rates. I mean, can you? When did you ever think in your life you would hear the words negative rates come out of somebody's mouth?
Well, certainly not out of Janet Yellen's mouth. It's not surprising that it comes out of the mouths of some of our congresspeople. I'm not even sure many of our congresspeople even understand what they're asking her and her semi-annual, fillet session, or her semi-annual rack session, where they stretch her out, or any of the Fed presidents, Fed chairpersons. But negative rates. Listen, I'm a pure economic guy who's taught at Rutgers University, which is where the great economist Milton Friedman spent many of his years educating my colleagues. And anytime you have a central bank or the notion ever of negative rates, that's an act of desperation. And it's the reason that central banks can get away with it. Right now, we have five around the world. It's probably worth listing: Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland, and of course the two biggies are the ECB and the Bank of Japan that have gone negative rates. It's probably it's probably worth noting that the reason they can get away with it is, unfortunately, a lot of people just don't understand what the ramifications of a negative rate interest rate policy means for it, for everything going on inside of the economy. But people should know the bottom line is negative rates is an act of desperation by the central planners, the central bank policymakers, to try and kickstart economies that are fundamentally broken across several different areas and aspects of it. And the mere notion that it came up in Janet Yellen's testimony in front of the House of Representatives, in front of the Senate this past week, is quite alarming. We shouldn't be talking about negative rates inside of the United States at all. There is a reason that banks and other institutions charge interest rates for the usage of money. It's because money is a risk asset, and there's a cost for that capital, and you need to be compensated for the cost of that capital. So if we're going against the grain and what is mathematically and financially the norm, then it's an act of desperation. So, yeah, the talk of negative rates is alarming to me.
Well, you know, one of the big problems that I see is the inability of our leaders to acknowledge that there is actually a problem. And we continue to hear that everything's okay and we're getting better. But let me ask you straight up. I haven't talked to you about this. Do you think things are getting better, or is our jobs getting better? Are those things getting better? What's your take?
Well, this is one of the great mysteries, and I believe it exposes the myth a lot about the way policymakers and politicians think and act and behave out in the public, but also the way that our economic data points are calculated and illustrated for us to consume and make our own investment decisions on. The answer is no, things are not getting better. I'll tell you from my own personal standpoint, I know nobody will shed a tear for anybody who works on Wall Street, and admittedly I've had a very nice career and a nice life, but most people on Wall Street, this is what they don't get, most people on Wall Street have not had a raise in years. Most people, and I'm just talking about so my little slice of the world, what I see and live every day. Most people on Wall Street are not the investment bankers that are pulling down, you know, $50 to $100 million a year. The overwhelming majority of people on Wall Street are people who are maybe traders taking care of client orders and, you know, talking about the markets like me, or their back office staff making sure trades clear properly, or their compliance professionals, whatever the case may be. They're just common folk who have not had a raise in years, and in fact, many have had a loss of income over the years. So, if I look at my little slice of the world, ever since the financial crisis, and then the supposed ability of the U.S. economy to come out of that in a good way, no, things have not gotten better. And then I do what I always say: look out the window, fundamental analysis, which means just kind of walking around and talking to people, talking to friends. And I find that people who work in other industries are very much in the same boat. People are still telling me one thing. They're just happy to have a job. And that's not traditionally where we've ever thought our own U.S. economy is. We're not just happy to have a job. Sure, we like to be employed. We like to be employed in a job that makes us feel good, wants us to get them to go to work every day. But we're in this to grow our incomes. We're in this to get better. We're in this to have a better life than our parents did. And I think the real sad thing for me is I've come to the conclusion, despite what the policymakers may say, which is your broader point, is that we are now in a situation where we're not going to get better. And I'm really fearful that my children, your children, will not have a better life than we did. And I throw a lot of that blame on that notion, if it does come to pass, on the existing policymakers and how they have this intractable inability to face the reality and really tell us the truth, and therefore submit policies which may be painful at the outset, but will get us to clear the markets, get us to true price discovery across all asset classes.
Hold that thought. We'll talk about that when we come back, because that's a big point that I've been harping on. This is The Bubba Show with Keith Bliss from Catone & Company, contributor for Fox, CNBC, and all the others. Plus, he's a big fan of The Bubba Report as a contributor and a partner. Make sure you check out stockbrokers.com. Their brand new report for the year is out, so go check it out. They've done a lot of work for you to help you do it better. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horace. We'll be right back after the break with more from our man, Keith Bliss. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Keith Bliss, Catone & Company Senior Vice President, also a frequent contributor, Yahoo, CNBC, Fox, Bloomberg, Phoenix TV, all of them. He's just the man of many treasures there. All right, so let's get back to addressing the problem that nobody refuses to address, because had they had let things get worse in 08, I say that we'd be in much better shape today. What do you say?
You know, I've changed my opinion over the years, and only because I'm an old, not only was I trained as an economist, but I'm also a money and banking guy. I think indulge me for a few minutes. I think the problems with 08 go back many, many years beforehand, and the problems with 08 were tough to face because, and the reason I bring up that I'm a money and banking guy is I recognize the importance of banking institutions inside of not only the U.S. economy, but the global economy. And I believe through regulations, through political deals that were made, the banks were allowed to acquire too much power. They got way too big. I'm not a proponent of eliminating or going back to Glass-Steagall, but I think that there have been some, now that I've examined it for the last 8 years, I think there's some things that they could have done better to keep us from getting in that situation. But once we got in that situation, they were faced with a binary solution. Let the banks fail or don't let the banks fail. It really, when you think about it, it really comes down to that simple point. And I think based upon what they knew at that time in 2008, letting the banks fail as opposed to not letting the banks fail and bail them out was what they knew at that point. I'm sure they thought that was the better situation. If they'd let some of the larger banks fail beyond Lehman Brothers, and you saw the chaos that Lehman created, not only in financial markets, but the ripple effect into the emerging markets and other asset classes. And I think once they saw that play out, they became very afraid about letting a Bank of America or a Wells Fargo or even a Goldman Sachs, dare we say, fail. But you're absolutely right. What it has now created is 8 years later, we still, because they've had to layer on additional complex, non-traditional types of policies on top of the already complex non-traditional policies, we now have this spaghetti code of sorts of monetary and banking policy, which is disallowing the markets to behave the way that they should. And all markets, just like all things in nature, should be able to clear themselves. Capital goes where capital is rewarded. That is the fundamental aspect of any financial market. And because you have these perverse policies with regards to interest rates or regulation or reserve requirements or capital flows or currency rate manipulation from the central governments, markets cannot clear properly in a natural fashion. And therefore, it's very challenging to understand where capital needs to go.
And again, that goes back to just the simple that assets know how to price themselves, because really what it comes down to is, what are you willing to pay for it? What am I willing to sell it? At some point, we will create price discovery. Now, you were educated as an economist or some version thereof. Are you from the Keynesian school or the Western school? Which were you educated in?
No, that's what I brought up before. Milton Friedman was very much a capitalist type of economist. That's what I was taught. Strict monetary policy of an unobtrusive nature, and that's the way I was taught. So no, I'm absolutely not from that school of thought that says we need to throw more money at a problem to get us out of it. Government should go ahead and bail things out. Government should really prime the pump of additional liquidity in the markets to help them clear properly. That's not where I come from. I do not believe that at all.
I mean, and we've seen perfect example of that happening, because basically, if you would look underneath the hood, and even if you go back to last year and you look underneath the hood of the economy or the stock market, for example, I mean, the stock market was actually in much more dreadful shape than anybody is willing to admit, but because of a few stocks, it carried the day. But, I mean, you looked at stocks like Walmart, Caterpillar, you know, all of the ag stocks. I mean, they were just absolutely obliterated. And, of course, our commodities are in the toilet. I mean, what's the solution there, Keith? What do you see as a solution in your mind?
The main solution for any market problems and any economic problems is putting policies, regulations, laws, you name it, in place, which will allow economies to grow in their own organic way. And certainly here in the United States, but we see this in other developed regions of the world, that's just not been the case. That's just not been the case. Productivity and growth inside of an economy, allowing companies to organically grow, allowing entrepreneurs to have a playing field that will allow them to enjoy the success of their ideas, allowing companies to hire and pay people a meaningful wage and allow that wage to grow is really the elixir for any problems that you have inside of an economy. So the mere notion that, and this goes back to, and it borders slightly on a Keynesian style of mentality, but certainly on a big government, and that's the best thing for you type style of mentality. You cannot manage your way out of natural things happening inside of markets. Human behavior cannot be managed to the nth degree with central bank and governmental policy. So for my mind is I think we should be not only the United States, but also Europe, Japan, China now, certainly in the developed world, and then it will, my belief is it will flow down to the emerging and developing world, enacting or putting in place pro-growth business policies that will allow the economy to grow organically, and then the markets will clear, because then you'll have enough organic liquidity and wealth inside of the system, as opposed to wealth that's being created out of thin air by the governments.
Aye, aye, aye. And that brings us into, obviously, we've got the elections coming up. And, you know, does it bother you that, A, they spend billions of dollars now and that these things go on for years getting elected? Does that trouble you at all?
Yeah, of course it does. Of course it does. Because you and I both know, you and I who are of age, who have voted in several presidential election cycles, and I'll reveal my age, the first presidential election cycle that I voted in was 1984, when Ronald Reagan, you know, smashed Walter Mondale in a massive landslide. So I think at that point I became immediately interested in politics, and it was a much simpler game back then. Of course, some of the advancements in our world with technology and the way we disseminate information have led to the world we live in now, because information is disseminated real time across several thousand different platforms. So that's created an inherent need by politicians to just spend more money, because they've got to try and cover themselves on the major platforms that disseminate that information. But yeah, the mere fact that I would guess that the two main party candidates will probably, they say it's definitely going to be at least $1 billion. I submit it's probably going to be closer to $2 billion by the time they get done. And the problem with this is, of course, is that this is not that amount of money allows them to pander to several constituent groups, special interest groups, and nothing ever gets solved. There's no clear logical type of plan to move things forward. And that goes for both the Republicans and the Democrats, by the way. I will reveal that I tend to agree more with the Republican stance on things, even though they've strayed mightily from their their traditional ways of thinking about fiscal policy and social policy. But again, they've done that to pander to votes.
I mean, well,
so you're right. I mean, the amount of money that's spent is just it's grotesque in some ways.
I mean, I'm with you. I think both sides of the aisle are broke, and it's interesting. I'll bring up a point when we come back from the break. But I'm with Keith Bliss, Catone and Company Vice President, contributor to Fox, CNBC, Yahoo, Phoenix TV, Bloomberg. Does them all well. As you can tell, I'm with him. I got to have my dictionary handy so I can make sure I understand exactly what you say. But make sure you check out stockbrokers.com, the number one source for comparing online brokers. They just came out with their annual brokerage thing, and it's really a pretty cool mod. You put in what you want, and it'll spit out a screener just like for the broker that you're looking for. So go to stockbrokers.com and check them out. You heard Blaine speak yesterday, so you kind of know what they're doing. This is the Bubba Show. Check out Bubba Trading. Get yourself a copy of the Bubba Report, as well as anytime you miss a show. LibertyTalk.fm. Be one of the hundreds of many hundreds of thousands of people that download the show every month. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back with Keith after the break. The Bubba Show.
How about you?
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Keith Bliss, Catone & Company Vice President, also contributor to Fox, CNBC, Bloomberg, Phoenix, all Yahoo, and writes and is a key contributor to the Bubba Report, as well as BubbaTrading.com, and is a regular member of my team. So, Keith, you know, on Saturday, of course, very sad, tragic day. We had Justice Scalia pass away, and it wasn't 5 minutes. The guy, the body wasn't even warm yet or cold yet. And already these jackasses are fighting on both sides of the aisle. Now, can we be any more ridiculous when it comes to things like that?
Sure, pardon you. I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, are we that, are both sides so desperate to either hold on to power or to retain power? Or in the case of now, the balance of conservative versus liberal thought on the Supreme Court, apparently, is, you know, now is the battle. Are we that pathetic that we can't allow the normal humanitarian aspect of grieving over somebody who's just died? It really was. I was shocked. I'm like you. You probably... On your phone, you're like me. You get alerts for news. We have to. It's part of the job. It's part of our chosen profession. And as soon as I saw the alert that Justice Scalia had tragically passed away, albeit he was, what, 81 years old or something like
that? He was 79
that,
and he was sick. But you know, again, he's the guy. I mean, 29 years on the bench.
Yeah, and he's the de facto leader of conservative thought when it comes to constitutionalism. I get it. I understand. I mean, it's as much as he was loved and revered on the far right, he was hated and reviled on the far left. And very often, he was the deciding opinion when it came to lots of things that were decided by the Supreme Court. But that tells you it really. I had a couple of thoughts when I saw that he died. Number one is, as you pointed out, I knew that the politicians, whether it's the Obama administration, those on the far left, or even Ted Cruz, they just couldn't resist having to give the press a soundbite about it. And yeah, I try to look at the human element. This is somebody's grandfather, father, husband, uncle, brother, you name it, who just passed away. Let these things happen naturally first before we start throwing the corpse in the middle of the basketball court to have a game with it. And The second thing I thought is that, you know, now there's going to be this battle royale where, listen, I get it that the Supreme Court justices are human beings. They're going to have their own thoughts and opinions, and they get selected. One of the elegant things about our political system is that the president gets to propose a nominee for the Supreme Court, and then the Senate either confirms him or denies him. And therefore, each of the Supreme Court justices has their human beings. They have their own leanings with regard to, you know, the way life should be viewed through the constitutional lens. But it really, all nine justices should be there to perform the act of fairness and give the most logical opinion, regardless of their own personal feelings, as it relates to decisions being decided through that lens of the Constitution.
I could not agree with you more. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, and I was just going to say that I fear this battle, which is going to come about, because mark my words, Obama is going to, he's now got, you know, a little less than a year left in his presidency. He's absolutely going to nominate somebody who's going to be far left leaning for the court. And in my mind, I'd rather have nine justices on the Supreme Court that view the world straight down the middle. Because, sure, I lean a little right on some things, but on some social things, I lean a little left. So you could probably call me right down the middle.
You're down the middle.
I really don't care what anybody thinks about that.
I agree. And, I agree with you.
Yeah, and I wish Obama could have the decency to just say, you know what? This is one thing I do agree with what Ted Cruz said. Because the election is so close for the next president, and because this is now going to be a hot-button issue here, Obama should have the decency and the respect for the American people and the dignity to step aside and say, the next president will be the one to nominate the next Supreme Court justice. But I don't believe that guy falls into any three of those categories, so I believe he'll probably nominate somebody to the far left here in the next couple of weeks.
But you know it's going to happen. There's going to be a big battle, but at the end he'll probably end up appointing somebody because he's allowed to appoint somebody for 2 years, and then they can reevaluate it after 2 years. So but again, I agree with you. I'm with you. I believe that we should be more centered because, again, I think there's a lot of issues that are not really political issues that need to be handled. And, you know, I'm not going to go into them because I don't want to rile up anybody, but there's certain things that we should all have the common decency to understand for everybody. And that's why I always say both sides there, I don't care where you sit, you're all screwed up because there's too many special interests. There's too much money changing hands for too little stuff. And at the end of the day, in my opinion, most of them, I can't say them all because I don't know them all, but the ones I know, they don't do jack. And they do nothing but waste time and money doing nothing. And to me, it's getting extremely frustrating because, as you said earlier, it's going to be a bad sign for our kids. And I'm not worried about me anymore. I mean, I'm past the worry stage of that stuff. But for my children, my grandchildren, this could become a problem because we're getting so far off center and so far off what was intended to be done here that we really just need to have, as you said, and I think Reagan was a kind of center kind of guy a little bit. I think Clinton was a kind of a center kind of guy. Okay. I mean, you know, I think those are kind of guys that you want to look at that can look at the world regular and say, this is what I think is best for everybody, not what's my opinion only. You know what I mean? I do.
And a lot of people, if you go to my Facebook page and you're a friend of mine and you're able to go in and look at all the personal information I put up, they ask you for your political affiliation in one of the sections. I put down for mine reasonable and rational. and that's my political thoughts. Reasonable and rational. What makes sense? But unfortunately, we've gotten to the point, I blame the political parties. They've done this on purpose to polarize our country, to pit friends against one another. I resist it all the time. Good friends of mine, years and years and years, they try to drag me into a political conversation about the most, you know, asinine, trivial things in the world because they've fallen into that trap of saying you're either with us or against us, regardless of whether you're on the left or the right. And I just think that's an awful way to live. It's really, and I know we're going to stray off on a bunch of different things that we could talk about, but it's really suppressed that free speech and freedom of expression and opinion in this country because people are afraid that if they do speak their mind and say what they want to say, they're gonna find themselves in a fist fight with somebody.
Yeah, and I had one political conversation at Durham once. I ended up walking home, but but I mean, you know, again, I don't want to make this a whole political show, but I just the biggest thing that bothers me more than anything else is the money that they just spend to get elected, but then to be in office. You know, they keep creating. All these guys are doing is they're building bigger government to create their jobs and keep their jobs in bay. And to me, that's a troublesome thing as well. I mean, even when they dragged Clinton before because of Monica Lewinsky, because even the Janet Yellen testimony is absurd at the amount of time and money that we're wasting to do this. And it doesn't need to be like this. And I don't understand why we continue to make things, you know, TV. I mean, the baseball players on steroids, they had to go to the Hill. I mean, is this what we're coming down to? I can't. To me, it's about the money. I mean, we're in deficit, but they continue to spend. Why do they want to spend? Because they want to keep getting elected. So if they keep taking care of their constituents and keep giving them the money, they're going to get elected. And that's, you know, obviously Obama's on the march to build the entitlement society. And, you know, the Republicans are wanting to get tax cuts. And I get it all. And again, if we quit wasting so much, we wouldn't have as many problems as we have today. But that's just another story for another day. Yeah.
I agree 100%. I mean, there's a problem with the system in several different ways, but I always point to a couple of things. Number one is that if you go back and you actually read some of the historical writings of the founding fathers, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, if you go back and read James Madison, for example, if you go back and read the thoughts of what they did when they delved into this experiment, being a representative or senator was not meant to be your career. You know, most of the founding fathers were gentleman farmers, but the populace at the time was very undereducated or uneducated. So these gentlemen left their farms or their existing employment and went and established a government and then sat in the government to make sure that things got off and running in good stead. It was never intended for some guy to be like Charlie Rangel from New York. It was never intended for him to serve, you know, 24 straight sessions of Congress. It's not the way it was meant to be. And when that happens, by the way, we all know, we see it, you never get an advancement of thought. You never get new ideas. You never get new ways of looking at things. And sadly, what happens, and again, I'll use Charlie Rangel because I think he's not a good person, you get guys who exploit their constituency and never do anything that is good for them. And by the way, you usually see that from the inner city representatives, if we could look over history. The second thing that I always scratch my head about is, how is it a system where you've got people that go into when they get elected, maybe they come out the back end, you know, 16 or 18 years later, and they're multimillionaires?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
We have to talk about that. We have to talk about that another time. This is the Bubba Show. I'm with my man Keith Bliss, Catone and Company Vice President, contributor to Fox, CNBC, Bloomberg, and all the rest. He does it all. Very, very bright guy. Understands it and lives it the way you hear him. This is how he's all time. Bubba Report. He's a writer. He's a writer for the Bubba Show. He's a partner in Bubba Trading and many other things. You miss a show, LibertyTalk.fm on demand. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be right back after the break with more from Keith Bliss, the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, with my friend, my partner, my man, Keith Bliss, Catone and Company, Vice President, contributor to all the major networks. I'm not listing him anymore. So, Keith, I talk about the Fed. We talk about, you know, the monetary policy, and I'm almost to the point that I'm almost starting to be a Ron Paul believer that we should end the Fed, at least in its current construction, because somewhere along the line, whether it was Greenspan who got off the track of what the Federal Reserve was actually supposed to do, I think that the Fed is as broke as anything, and I think they're doing a horseshit job. I can't help but I had to say it. And when you can tell me that they're now leveraged at 77-1, when Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns went out of business at 38-1, to me, that indicates a much bigger problem down the road. And I'm not only talking about the economy, I'm just talking about the whole desire. And the last point is that basically we know that Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan own portions of the private facility, as well as the United States government, even though it's not a government agency. Go ahead. And what say you, my brother?
Well, I do agree with you. I mean, the way the Federal Reserve, you're right, and it goes all the way back to the Greenspan era in the mid-90s, so we've been dealing with this for well over 20 years now. There's a theory in technology when programmers are building or writing code to solve a problem or to build a product. And when they start straying from the original mission of writing that computer code, it's called scope creep. And so when the Fed was enacted in 1913, in Jekyll Island, Georgia, a place that I used to go vacation quite often as a little boy, by the way, its mandate, it had a dual mandate: maximum employment and price stability in the U.S. economy. The mechanism, let me say this, I encourage everybody to go find a very simple money and banking book that emphasizes the influence of the Federal Reserve on our money and banking system here in the United States. And it will give you a very nice, easy to understand display of why the Fed exists and what it's intended to do, and why it uses interest rates to boost the economy or to reduce unemployment. But anyway, I won't give my own money and banking lesson here on this. We don't have enough time. But that is their dual mandate. That's what they should be doing. It's not to save the economy. It's not to bail out the banks, even though they are the chief bank regulator. And by the way, the reason they're the chief bank regulator and the reason why most of the banks are what is known as Federal Reserve System banks is so that the Fed could have the greatest influence on the interest rates by adjusting deposit reserve requirements and things of that nature. But again, its dual mandate is price stability and maximum employment. The last 20 years, we've gotten way beyond that, in my opinion, through a variety of ways. And they've really been focused on preserving the wealth that has been established and resides inside of the asset markets. Whether it's the equity market, whether it's the corporate bond market, whether it's real estate, you name it. Because I think they've come to the conclusion, and certainly the politicians who reauthorized the charter for the Fed and have influence over the Fed have come to the conclusion that, oh my God, if we don't keep these asset markets propped up, there will be billions or trillions of dollars of wealth that will go away, and we will have anarchy on our hands. And that's right. And so therefore, the Fed has gotten into this negative feedback loop of policy prescriptions that are straying and creeping beyond their scope of what they needed to do. And now we've got this, as I said earlier, we've got this spaghetti code or spider web of monetary policy, which I think they don't really know what to do right now. And the real troubling part of that is that they are the ones that are supposed to be guiding, again, the dual mandate through the use or the tool of interest rate policy. And I'm really nervous and scared that now their moves impact so many other areas of the U.S. and global economy that they were never intended to do, and it's a real issue. And that goes back to the first segment that you and I talked about, is how do you get to the markets to clear proper price discovery and proper valuation for the assets around the world, and therefore allowing the economy to grow appropriately? I don't think you can for a long, long time.
Well, you're never going to, because, again, the real problem I see, Keith, is I've got Janet Yellen, I'm not saying she's not a smart person. Again, but I call them ignorant and incompetent and have no common sense, because you and I both know from being in the real world that no problem is solved from a library book. Okay, you can get a base education from a library book, but you have to be able to think on your feet and understand. And this should have been solved long ago. But Bernanke, in my opinion, dropped the ball in May of 13 when he was going to raise, and he let the Wall Street talk him out of it. And of course, it's been more downhill since then. And I think that's the problem. When you won't admit you have a problem, it's hard to fix it until you do. What do you think?
I agree 100%. 100%. One of the things that you've learned and I've learned in our long years of business is that if you make a mistake, you own up to it immediately, and you start figuring out how to reverse the mistake and move on. You don't. And again, I I've always liked Ben Bernanke. I don't know him personally. I think he's probably the right guy to be in that job at the time. A very calm demeanor. He's kind of like a basketball referee. Really didn't care what other people said. But I'm guessing he had a lot of politicians whispering in his ear over those years. And as soon as they floated the trial balloon in 2013, as you're pointing out, about going ahead and starting a modest quarter point increase to the Fed funds rate, and the equity market went into the infamously so-called taper tantrum. And I'm sure there are politicians that rang his office nonstop telling him, say, what are you doing? What are you doing? I've got constituents calling me. They're losing money in their 401ks. Their equity holdings are going down. So they backed away. As soon as you're supposed to have an unbiased, uninfluenceable type of organization or policymaking organization like the Fed, as soon as you have them start being influenced by market events, it's over. It's over. The effectiveness and efficacy of any programs that they put in place are now rendered useless because they know, or the world knows, that they can influence their decisions. Look at it this way. Everybody should look at it this way. Think of we've all seen parents who have spoiled brat kids. Well, the spoiled brat kids didn't get spoiled. The parents made them spoiled. And then the parents then get into a situation where if they try to impose some discipline on the kid throws a tantrum, and you've seen those parents back away. You've seen them, right, Todd? I've seen them.
Listen, I coached, and my first meeting every year was, don't talk to me. I don't want to talk to any parents. I will talk to the kids. I don't want to hear from anybody. I don't want to hear about anything else. If you talk to me once about the sport, your kid will be on the bench. That's it. I got no interest. I don't want to hear from you because, again, that is true. I mean, look, I always compared it myself to just a relationship. You know, you're married. If you have a problem with your wife, if something goes wrong and you don't address it right away, what happens? The problem gets bigger and it mushrooms. A small problem turns into a big one.
Yes.
And that's what they've done here. And that's my problem with the whole system, is that nobody stepped up and just said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take care of business and we're going to take the beating. But it doesn't matter because we know, just like the stock market. You and I are talking that we don't like the market, but we do know one other fact, that eventually we come back to true course and it will go back up and it will go average its usual 9% year over year, whatever it is, in time.
Yep.
But until you allow markets to trade freely, which we have not done, which is a problem, and unfortunately we're running out of time, but until they just let the market, if they would have just done the common sense thing and done what they were supposed to do, we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in. And that's the end of the story. And that, unfortunately, is the end of our time. Keith Blish, you are the man, the myth, the legend. And obviously, I always enjoy having you on. I'd love to have you on more, but I can't get you that often. But this is Keith Blish, Katona Company, and does all kinds of media. You got to check him out and see what he writes for the Bubba Report, as well as the Bubba Show and Bubba Trading. He's awesome. Thanks, Keith.
My pleasure, Bubba. Good to be with you.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out our friends at stockbrokers.com. They got their brand new report coming out yesterday. It actually came out. You got to check it out. It'll help you pick it out. If you ever miss a show, go to libertytalk.fm and you will get it there on demand. And of course, one of the biggest things I didn't get the chance to talk with Keith is about hedging. Get yourself hedged. I'm telling you, you'll love it. I got people that are just, every time the market goes down, they send me a love letter. That's the way you should be. Go to BubbaTrading.com. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We did spend the day with Keith Bliss. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you later, everybody. Thanks.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.